This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM in McLean County, 92.5 FM in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 FM in Pontiac, all in good old Central Illinois. I'm here today with my lovely wife, Lynn, and we're going to have a great show for you today. We are going to do a show today on freedom of speech, on what is it, and how does it work in America, and what has the church said in the past about free speech? Where did the idea of free speech and the separation of church and state really come from in the first place? Did it come from the founders of our country? Did it come from Jefferson and Madison and others who founded this country? Or was that first broach somewhere else? And if so, where was that somewhere else? So, you know, we're going to talk about those things. At any rate, is there protection in freedom of speech? And is there protection in freedom of religion? There's a lot of invoking of freedom of speech and freedom of religion today by various politicians and other people, because there has been and is an attack on Christianity a lot in Europe and other countries, but there also is an attack right here, a secular attack right here in America on the Catholicism, the Catholic Church, and Christianity in general. And there's been a lot of invoking of free speech and freedom of religion in order to defend religion. Is that the right way to defend it? Is there protection again in it? So these are the things we're going to talk about, freedom of conscience and that kind of thing. I want to go over an article. It's entitled Freedom of Speech, and the subtitle, it may surprise you, The Liberal Heresy at the Heart of Conservative Politics. Again, that's freedom of speech, the liberal heresy at the heart of conservative politics. It appears in the April 30th edition of The Remnant, and that is a Catholic newspaper, sort of a traditionalist newspaper that advocates the return and staying with the tradition of the church from its very beginning to now, the dogma and doctrine of the church. So it's a traditionalist paper. The author of the article is Michael J. Massey, and he is a columnist for The Remnant. But I think it's very, very interesting, and I've had some of these ideas myself before, and here I find in this article a lot of them laid out probably perhaps better than I could do on my own. So I want to go over this, and then my wife and I will talk about it. I think it will invoke a lot of thought on the part of you listeners out there. So without further ado, I think we'll go into it to make sure that we do cover it. And Massey writes, with the rapidly increasing attacks on the Catholic Church and even the most basic of Christian principles, many Catholics today, and of course other Christians, seek refuge in the language of freedom in an attempt to preserve their faith. Many turn to popular conservative commentators and politicians for protection. However, the protection they are offered is an ungodly compromise, according to Massey. What antidote do conservatives offer in order to protect Christianity? Invariably, it is one word, freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience. And, of course, all of those sound very good. They're very familiar to us, and we take these things for granted without ever thinking about them. And I think it's time that we should examine some of the principles that our country is founded on and ask ourselves, are there some flaws that we are overlooking? At any rate, these freedoms, freedom of speech, religion, and conscience, is the catch cry of today's conservatives. When Christians are prevented from speaking at universities, conservatives seek to counter this by demanding freedom of speech. When it is proposed that Christian schools be denied the freedom to discriminate against staff who oppose Christian doctrine, conservatives demand that freedom of religion be enshrined in law. Considering that the new political champions of the Christian right are conservative, it is interesting to consider the word conservative. What do conservatives do? Well, of course, they conserve. What is it exactly that they conserve? Well, they conserve the liberal traditions of the Enlightenment, because that's where we got some of these, at least that's where they're attributed to, and it was Enlightenment thinking that formed a lot of the basis of our country. And he goes on, he says, the very same liberal traditions which have led society to its current state, and the same traditions which have been condemned by the church for some 2,000 years, and these are the traditions that conservative attempts to conserve. And I've talked about this before, and I haven't had an article like this say it, but I've come to some of these ideas myself, so you've heard it on this show before, that the fact is conservatives conserve liberal traditions. And he goes on, with Christians being increasingly censored and prevented from publishing their religious views, however, it is certainly understandable why many seek refuge in the alluring ideas of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. But we must ask ourselves what the results of such freedom of speech, religion, and the press are. And I've commented on this before, the whole concept of freedom of speech, the Enlightenment concept, ignores, if not denies, human nature. And that is the fact that human beings suffer from concupiscence. We suffer from the tendency to sin and do evil, in other words, to go downhill, to give in to a lot of the weaknesses of our human nature. And it seems that there is a denial of this human nature in secular liberalism itself. And he goes on, when all speech, both good and evil, is allowed at universities, the evil ideas of the anti-Christian left are allowed the unfettered freedom to calumniate the church and drag souls into error. When all religion is free, heresy and paganism are given a platform to drag souls to eternal damnation. Unrestrained freedom, the heresy of liberalism, is one of the most pernicious evils in the history of the church. And that brings us to the history of the church, because a lot of the things that liberals enunciate and talk about were first talked about and enunciated earlier by the church, and we're gonna see that fact. A lot of these ideas actually came from within the church, but in opposition. And so we'll talk about the early church. Many will be surprised to learn that some of the earliest references to freedom of speech come from the church fathers. Far from championing this conservative value, however, the fathers explicitly advocated against freedom of speech. St. John Chrysostom declared in the 4th century, he, that is Christ, does not therefore forbid our checking heretics and stopping their mouths and taking away their freedom of speech and breaking up their assemblies and confederacies. So that is shocking, I'm sure, and surprising to the ears of, you know, Westerners, because we have been for 200 years steeped in this idea that freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and so forth is not only possible, but it's good. He goes on, and St. Athanasius noted that sinners employ the freedom of speech in broad ways to steal the sweetness of truth. And remember, St. Athanasius was called, you know, Athanasius contra mundum, Athanasius against the world, because he opposed Arianism, and that was a heresy that declared that Jesus Christ was a creature, the greatest of all creatures, but nevertheless a creature, who, you know, in other words, didn't exist until after God existed, therefore a creature. And that it took 300 years or so to put down that heresy. Athanasius was ostracized. He was exiled. He suffered a lot of calumny and so forth under attacks from Arians. And yet he held out and denied this heresy and preached the truth and finally prevailed. So he was, you know, quite a rock. It goes on here. Almost since the very advent of the printing press, the church has opposed freedom of the press and was, in fact, the first institution in the world to begin press censorship. And, of course, our liberal friends attack that and look at it as if somehow or another, in doing so, the church was doing harm and evil. And we'll see that liberalism has done far more harm than the church has ever done. In 1486, less than 50 years after Gutenberg's invention of the printing press, a great number of impure pamphlets and books had begun to be produced, which posed a great danger to souls. The church did not respond by promoting freedom of the press in the hope that good pamphlets and books would counter the influence of impure ones. In 1766, Pope Clement XIII warned of the dangers of anti-Christian writing. He decried freedom of the press as giving the snake's poison to the unwary. Pope Leo XII condemned freedom of religion under the name of religious tolerance. The greatest nail in the coffin for freedom of speech came with Pope Gregory XVI's encyclical, Mirare Vos. In order to properly understand this encyclical, however, we must know the people and events which led to its promulgation in 1832. It was two Catholic priests, Father Jean-Baptiste Henri Dominique Le Cordier, and another one, Father Felicity Robert de Lamennais. And it was Lamennais who is the main focus of this article. He was the one who actually took these things and made a sort of career out of addressing them. And Lamennais, whose writings for the journal L'Avenir, the future, that is, provoked Pope Gregory XVI to produce Mirare Vos. The L'Avenir, or the future, it was a newspaper, controversy, took place amid the backdrop of the French Revolution. Although Catholicism had been legal in France since 1801, in other words, during the French Revolution, which lasted from 1789 to about the turn of the century, Catholicism was illegal. In fact, you know, the revolution was against religion entirely. It was a very so-called secular revolution.
So much for freedom.
Yeah, right.
Liberty.
Right.
That was the French rebelled against so they could have freedom and liberty. Think about it.
Right. Freedom, equality, and fraternity were the catchwords of the French Revolution, but instead it produced a bloody massacre of people, you know, all over France, and people had had enough of it by the end of the 19th century, or rather the end of the 18th century going into the 19th century, and they returned Napoleon to the throne. We can't get into too much of that, but that's what had happened. At any rate, by 1801, religion was re-legalized in France. But because of the revolution, there were too few priests to service the entire country, thanks to the execution and expulsion of thousands of Catholic priests during this revolution. Lamennais grew up in this environment and recognized the need to fix these errors. Under Napoleon's empire, he and his brother Jean-Marie wrote several books detailing his ideas on how to cure the church's malaise. In 1814, when Napoleon proposed to give metropolitan bishops the right to institute new bishops, the two brothers, but mostly Lamennais, infuriated Napoleon by writing a staunch defense of the Pope's supreme right to canonical institution. It was after this work that Lamennais made a name as a great defender of the church. It wasn't until 1817, however, that the young Lamennais was counseled to enter the priesthood. As a priest, he became known throughout France as a great orator and Catholic apologist. After some time, however, some began to notice errors creeping into his philosophy. In the dying days of the Bourbon dynasty, elections had brought a large number of anti-clerical liberals to the Chamber of Deputies, who proceeded to pass legislation repressing many religious orders, most notably the Jesuits. Lamennais quickly took the defense of the Jesuits and published articles critical of the government of King Charles X for allowing such egregious legislation. His defenses, however, began to drift in the direction of promoting religious liberty as a defense against the anti-clerical attacks. He founded the General Agency for the Defense of Religious Liberty, while L'Avenir, that is, the future, the paper that he had, did much praiseworthy work. It also strayed dangerously toward heresy, all the while with praiseworthy motives. It sought to protect the church from interference by the state through promoting the complete separation of church and state. So there we have this idea of complete separation of church and state invoked by Lamennais, a spokesman for the church. And that fit right along with Republican principles that were growing out of the 18th century and the 18th century philosophes, which I've talked about before, and of course had a great effect on Thomas Jefferson and a great effect on James Madison. you know, the two who were most responsible for the, well, Jefferson for the Declaration of Independence and, of course, Madison for the Constitution, the United States Constitution, and both, you know, promoting the American Revolution. So, you know, these ideas bled into what's going on in our country today. But notice here that the church was dealing with these ideas for a long, long time. At any rate, Lamennais sought to protect the church from anti-clerical laws through promotion of freedom of religion. But most people don't know that the freedom of speech and religion and the separation of the church were ideas that were tossed around and talked about and looked at by people in the church for a long, long time, going back all the way almost, you know, to the very beginning of the church. They think that there was something new that just came about with the American Revolution or the French Revolution or the 18th and 19th century. Not so. At any rate, essentially, Lamennais held that the truth would defend itself. And that's what we think today, don't we? The idea that antidote to bad free speech is more speech. I think one of our justices of the Supreme Court said that. It might have been. I'm not sure if that was Justice Scalia.
I think it was.
And maybe it was.
I think it was.
Or one of the others. At any rate, this idea of more speech. But, I mean, if free speech or bad speech can seriously affect people, and I think we'll show that it does, then that could be, in many cases, like pouring gasoline on the fire. So this whole idea that somehow truth will defend itself, perhaps it will in the long run, but in the short term, lots and lots of people can suffer egregiously. And we'll see that that has been the case all the way throughout from the 18th century all the way on until now.
Oh, this goes back into the early times of Christ.
Yeah, it does. But, I mean, some of the horrible things that have happened have been more actually recently in a supposedly more enlightened age. You know, we had the Enlightenment, but look at what's happened in the 200 years that we'll go into. And you're right there. But at any rate, in order to secure these objectives that Lamennais promoted freedom of speech, it was for this noble reason, that is actually to protect the church and to protect people. But it was a flawed reason that he promoted freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And he promoted them, of course, in order to secure the objectives he had in mind, which was to protect the freedom of religion and the Jesuits and so forth. Lamennais and Le Avenir, that is the newspaper, The Future, sought to create a federation uniting the Catholics of France, Belgium, Ireland, and Poland and Germany. But most disturbingly, also the liberals of those countries, who espoused his liberal principles of freedom of speech in the press. And so you can see there is where both the church, in a sense, Lamennais, you know, wasn't the official spokesman for the church, of course, but he was a prominent figure in it. And so these things converged. You know, people in the church who were imitating Lamennais were also, you know, speaking along those lines as well. At any rate, we're going to have to take a break here, and we'll come back and talk about the reaction of the Vatican to what was going on with Lamennais. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Can you hear me now? Catholic Spirit Radio has wonderful news to share. Our radio broadcasts now reach all the way to the Pontiac area. This means more listeners in and around Pontiac, Flanagan, Lexington, and Chenoa can hear the identical EWTN and local programs that are being aired in Bloomington Normal. Our northern listeners can hear Catholic Spirit Radio on 88.3 FM. Catholic Spirit Radio is here to share the beauty and truth of our Catholic faith. Tell your friends to tune in at 89.5 or 92.5 FM, and now also on 88.3 FM. If you live or travel northeast of Normal, can you hear me now? Of course, anyone can hear Catholic Spirit Radio 24 hours a day on your radio, on your phone, with our free app, through Alexa, or on our website at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM. We're talking about freedom of speech and the concept of it, how we got it, and what it means and the various aspects of it and the stances that were taken on by especially the church, and the idea that these ideas of church and separation of state and so forth were in existence for a long, long time before they were ever incorporated into our Constitution and Declaration of Independence and along those lines. But at any rate, in response to Lamennais and his championing of freedom of speech as a means of actually protecting the church, Pope Gregory reacted to that, and the church, of course, the Vatican, other people in it. And Pope Gregory proceeded carefully to establish a theological commission to investigate the writings of Lamennais' paper, L'Avenir, that is, the future. The Pope responded with the encyclical Mirare Vos, and that's how we got that encyclical. That's what we've been explaining here, how that encyclical was arrived at. It was arrived at as a response to this whole movement of championing freedom of speech as some means of actually protecting the truth and protecting the good and protecting society and protecting the church. I mean, these were all good motives. But again, you know, you can have good intentions. They don't necessarily work out. So the encyclical was very carefully worded and far from issuing a blanket condemnation of Lamennais. It did, however, carefully and explicitly condemn the liberal freedoms espoused by Lamennais through his newspaper, The Future. However, Lamennais himself responded to this criticism somewhat ungracefully. He succumbed to pride, and he was angry, and he wrote to his friend Montalembert, and he said, "I renounce, without exception, all that filled my previous life." With this statement, Lamennais ceased celebrating Mass, and eventually, ultimately, he abandoned the faith. And this one great defender of the faith went on to become one of the greatest enemies of the 19th century. In other words, a secular philosophy, an ideology that he developed, took hold of Lamennais and actually moved him more primarily than his religion did. And I think a lot of that is happening today. People put their secular and ideological ideas first, instead of putting the truth of Christ in the church first. And I think that's one of the things, as we'll see, is hurting Western civilization. At any rate, the church's condemnations of Lamennais' liberal freedoms did not stop with Mirare Vos. After the liberal revolution of 1848 had swept Europe, Blessed Pope Pius IX took action in his encyclical Optimi Nascitis. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. At any rate, by calling not for freedom of religion, but for freedom of the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. He called for freedom of the church. At this time, the governments of Switzerland, Prussia, and other German states had taken away the church's right to operate schools and make episcopal appointments, and it imposed many other intolerable restrictions on the church. How did the Pope respond? Did he call for freedom of religion, you know, as a means of opposing these restrictions? No. In his encyclical Est de Multa, he again called only for the freedom of the Catholic Church. Blessed Pope Pius IX, ever the crusader against liberalism, never ceased his condemnations of these liberal errors, delivering perhaps the harshest condemnation of freedom of religion, speech, and the press. Continuing the work of Blessed Pius IX, another saintly pope, Leo XIII, continued the condemnation of freedom of speech in the press. And he said, in an article titled Libertas, he said, "The liberty of thinking and of publishing whatsoever each one likes, without any hindrance, is not in itself an advantage over which society can wisely rejoice." And he went on to say that, you know, he built on what one of the earlier popes said about poison. He said, just because there are antidotes available, it doesn't mean that people should be allowed to sell or give away poison. And that's a very, very, you know, commonsensical idea. I mean, speech can have, our language is extremely powerful. And speech can have effects that can be very, very devastating and dangerous. It is something that is far more dangerous in many cases than poison itself. And so this idea that unrestricted speech is okay may be a very flawed idea. We have to consider that, and I don't think that we do. If the mind assents to false opinions, Leo XIII said, and the will chooses and follows after what is wrong, neither can attain its native fullness, but both must fall from their native dignity into an abyss of corruption. Whatever, therefore, is opposed to virtue and truth may not rightly be brought temptingly before the eye of man, much less sanctioned by the favor and protection of the law, is what he is saying. In other words, this can be very dangerous. The church has always sought freedom, but never unrestrained freedom. What then are the limits to our freedom? In the 5th century, Pope St. Leo the Great showed us the nature of true freedom of speech, including its limits. So just imagine, all the way back in the 5th century, that would have been in the 400s. That's a long time ago, so these ideas were being talked about. And here's what St. Leo the Great said. He said, "We have received such freedom of speech from the most holy Peter, chief of the apostles, as to have the power both to maintain the truth and in the cause of peace, and to allow no one to disturb it in its firm position, but at once to repel the mischief." In other words, he's saying that we need to stick to what we have had handed on to us by Peter from the mouth of Christ himself, from the teaching of Christ himself, that Peter was commanded to go out and do. And we ought to protect that and make sure it's not disturbed. And if people try to disturb it with false teachings and false truth, then we ought to repel that. So many Catholics today promote these liberal freedoms with the purest of intentions. And I've heard this, you know, you can hear it on Catholic Spirit Radio a lot of times. This is a different side of the story, and I think we ought to give it consideration. At any rate, they do it with the purest of intentions to freely express their Catholic faith. Yet they fall prey to the same error as Lamennais. What we must remember is that good intentions are not sufficient for salvation. After all, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We must submit ourselves to the truth and never seek to promote the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press in pursuit of the truth at the expense of the truth. By doing so, we place error on the same pedestal with truth, evil with good, the devil with Christ. We must always remember that perennial maxim of the Church so championed by Cardinal Ottaviani of blessed memory: error has no rights. And so I'll end the article here, and we'll talk about it a little bit further and go on. I want to go on to show some of the damage that freedom of speech has done, and we ought to reconsider freedom of speech. And then also we'll get in a little bit, and my wife will talk, I think I mentioned this, about that great leveler when anyone talks about restricting freedom of speech, and why that great leveler, that charge against restricting freedom of speech, is itself an error. So we'll get on and talk about that a little bit. Some of the statistics that we have had from the Enlightenment time on until now. I mean, let's start with the French Revolution. When the French Revolution rejected the restrictions on freedom of speech, it championed freedom of speech, and it was going to give the world a whole new state based on secular ideas. It was going to institute liberty, equality, and fraternity among people, something that the church had already been doing for years. And it charged the church, of course, with all kinds of superstition, and it charged the church with all kinds of what it charged, at least as totalitarian, which, you know, or authoritarian, at least, restrictions on people's freedom. What did it result in? It resulted in 2 million people dead. In the Vendée alone, a part of France, 300,000 people were killed in the name of spreading liberty. These were traditional Catholics who tried to stand up for their church and were slaughtered. Then, following that, was the Napoleonic Wars. They killed 3 million people. There was the American Civil War, and our country, of course, was based on this idea of freedom of speech and freedom of association, and the idea that you could rebel against so-called injustice, rebel against the king. And in the American Civil War, 600,000 people were killed. In World War I, 16 million people died. In post-World War I Germany, 700,000 people died because of the Allies' restrictions on trade and restrictions on goods flowing into Germany in order to get them to accept the Treaty of Versailles instead of the treaty that they expected to get based on Wilson's 14 points, which is what they thought that they would get. And instead, they got a treaty that put a tremendous onus upon them. And it was something that paved the way for Hitler to come along because of, you know, what happened to the people there. Then we have the Russian Civil War, which killed 4 million people. We have the Russian Revolution, which killed 1.7 million people. We had World War II, which killed 70 million people altogether, the greatest number yet. We had the Nazis themselves, who killed 20 million people through, you know, 6 million Jews and others through the Holocaust and some of their other policies. This was, you know, right in the 20th century, right in supposedly an enlightened time, if you want to talk about the Enlightenment. We had Stalin, who was responsible for the deaths of 50 million people. My God. We had the Chinese communists, who were responsible for the deaths of 35 million people. We had Pol Pot very recently in time, you know, relative to history, responsible for 2 million people. And we've got North Korea, which we're still dealing with now, and it is responsible for the deaths of 1.6 million people, and it holds pretty much all of its own country hostage and a lot, of course, South Korea, because if we attack North Korea, they have promised to, you know, bombard South Korea and kill all those people there. This is what we're dealing with. So altogether, that adds up to about 218 million people in less than 200 years. And do we hear any, most of these were dead because of Enlightenment ideas. Now we hear a lot of ideas, even to this day, about authoritarian policies and the superstitious and the policies of the Catholic Church. We hear about the Crusades. We hear about the Inquisition. We hear about this, and yet we don't hear much about what has happened with all of these various isms, both left and right, really, which in my opinion are the same thing. Both left and right are products of liberalism. We don't hear about that at all. Now, how many did the church kill during this time? Actually, if you study very carefully history, historians that have studied it carefully will admit that the Inquisition, if you want to take that itself, killed anywhere from 3,000 to 10,000 people. Not 3 million, 3,000. And they didn't even govern 3 million people. From 3,000 to 10,000 people. Let's say the worst. Let's say 10,000 people died at the hands of the Inquisition. I'm not trying to champion an injustice. Probably a lot of those people were guilty and probably did things to deserve some kind of punishment. But it's not likely that that many died. And this was a period over a lot longer than 200 years. It was a period of about 600 years that the Inquisitions lasted. So if it killed 10,000 people over 600 years, that's a lot less than 218 million people over 200 or less than 200 years. So why do we hear so much about the cruelty or the superstition or the darkness of the church, and we hear hardly nothing about the excesses of the Enlightenment principles? There is a Jewish scholar, Dr. David Berlinsky. He's an agnostic intellectual, and he is the one that has compiled some of these figures in his book, The Devil's Delusion. And Berlinsky asks, who imposed poison gas? Who imposed barbed wire? Who imposed high explosives? Who imposed eugenics? Who imposed Zyklon B? Who imposed Napalm? Who imposed nuclear weapons? Who imposed the Holocaust? He says, it wasn't the Vatican, is the conclusion that he comes to. It wasn't the Vatican. He said, it's not the Vatican that attempts to censor pro-life, and I'll go on from there. He said, it's not, or I'm saying, it's not the Vatican that attempts to censor pro-life ads on Times Square talking about free speech. It's not the Vatican that censors college kids and does not allow them to take a view opposing the latest, you know, secular beliefs such as transgender and other things. It's not the Vatican that celebrates the right to leave a born baby die in a steel tub and that celebrates it with wine and cheese yet. I mean, who did that? It certainly wasn't the Vatican. It's not the Vatican science that changes horses in midstream and pretends that it doesn't know that life begins at conception. And then there's that great, great leveler that we always get when we attempt to say there needs to be some kind of restrictions on freedom of speech and there needs to be some kind of principle of God, you know, written into our Constitution and invoked, you know, in our laws. And what is that great leveler, Lynn, that's leveled at you if you dare to advocate a restriction on speech or to advocate that our Constitution and so forth should recognize basic religious principles or godly laws?
Well, it all hinges around who is saying what truth is, who's declaring the truth. What, you know, somebody has to take responsibility for what is truth. You know, Pilate even asked that question of Christ. He said, you know, what is truth? He brought that up, but what is...
But what do they declare against you anytime you attempt to say there should be some restrictions on speech? What is that great leveler that you always hear?
Who decides what is true?
Exactly. Who decides, you know... Who decides what the restrictions there shall be? Who gets to decide? And it always shuts everybody up, and it always, you know, sort of ends the conversation as if it is some great truth that has been enunciated, and everybody quails before it. So we're going to go ahead and stop here. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you arrived at that conclusion, the idea that, well, who gets to do it? Is it the Baptists that get to do it? Is it the Catholics that get to do it? Is it the Presbyterians get to do it? Do the seculars get to do it? Who is this group that is going to restrict or govern the freedom of speech? That's the great leveler that's always asked, and that's what we're going to address when we come back in the next segment. So we'll take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequencies, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5. FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break, and we're into the third segment of our show. We've been talking about free speech, and we're talking about the fact that free speech is not something that we should just take for granted as it's good, and there are no downsides to it, and that somehow there is no way to avoid it. As if that great leveler that Lynn, my wife, talked about, this idea of who gets to decide what the restrictions are on free speech or who gets to decide what basic, say, religious principles could be invoked, you know, to rest a lot of our law and government on. Who gets to decide that? That's always been used somehow or another to oppose any kind of restrictions on free speech. But the question is, does it make sense, really? And the answer is no. And why doesn't it make sense? It doesn't make sense because always somebody must decide which principles a country is going to be based on. That is, what principles its laws are going to be based on. Every single society in all of history, then and now, and it's impossible not to, has to decide what the religious basis for its laws will be. And I use that word religious because all principles at bottom are religious. And right now, the people who decide the principles that our society is based on, my charge is this, that they pretend that they are not religious, and that pretense gives them the right to determine and decide which principles the country will operate on by the very fact that they deny that their principles are religious at all, when indeed they are just as religious as anybody else's principles. So the fact is when somebody levels that at you, somebody somewhere has to decide, whether it's Supreme Court justices, whether it's politicians, whether it's public opinion, all based on the idea somehow in this country that their particular principles and their particular ideas are somehow secular, somehow that they are separated from the church, and somehow that they, you know, that there is a separation of church and state when there isn't any such thing. I've said it before. When you have this idea of separation of church and state, since all principles at bottom are religious, and since every country has to be based on some kind of principles of law, or else you have nothing but chaos, then the fact is that the state becomes a church, and the church becomes a state. That's exactly what happens. And Western civilization was based on a distinction between the church and the state. And so actually, when we come to these principles, whose principles should prevail, let's go back and take a look at the principles that built Western civilization. And it was the principles of Christianity that built Western civilization. It was the principles of the Catholic Church that were the foundation for Western civilization. Now, I'm not saying here that those principles were always perfect and in effect perfectly and worked out perfectly. Given human nature, given the fact that we are all prone to concupiscence, that we're all prone to selfishness, that we're all prone to sinful behavior and bad ideas, the church did not build Western civilization in one nice, smooth incline. It went up and down like a yo-yo, and there were setbacks. But the fact is, it was the institution that did indeed build it. It was the institution when Rome fell, and you had what was so-called the Dark Ages, which was not in any way the fault of the church. It was the church that built universities. It was the church that developed the basis for science. It was the church that developed all of these things. And it was the church that put a brake on governments, and it was the church that put a restriction on this idea of, you know, totally free speech, or this idea of going down lines and so forth, pretending that they were strictly materialist and secular. And my charge also is that secularism, materialism, cannot really be the ultimate basis and principle for any kind of government. I mean, science then never arrives at any ultimate truth. Its truths are constantly changing, and its truths are based on the material world. And science can't go behind that, because all the principles of science, the givens, that is, the things that it takes for granted, are actually material things, the laws of the material world. It takes these laws for granted. It itself doesn't have the tools to go behind these laws and examine them. It starts from these laws and proceeds from there. And so it has to take them as a given. And so science provides no real basis for the ultimate truth. It can't come out and tell anybody that it's a good idea. It can tell you how to make a gun. It can't tell you what to do with it. It can tell you how to cure cancer or cure some diseases, but it can't tell you how they should be employed and who you should cure. I mean, Zyklon B is a scientific product, and it killed, you know, hundreds of thousands of Jews under Hitler. Science couldn't tell you that you shouldn't do this, or that you should do it either. It can't tell you those kinds of things. It can't arrive at religious principles. And every country has to decide what its laws will be based on. Those principles are always religious. So I'll go ahead and turn this over a little bit to my wife. She is going to talk about some of the predictions that were made all the way back at the time of the apostles themselves and now are a gospel truth. What can happen when there are no religious restrictions of deep or religious principles on free speech? And, you know, what does the Bible itself say? And what does the gospels themselves say?
Well, I think we have, you know, basically have to recognize that God is truth. That's where truth comes from. From the very beginning, it comes from God. It's not a thing created by man. It's not for man to decide what is was true and what is not. It's for God to decide. We have to follow the word of God, which basically comes to us through the church and through scripture. Remember even Pilate, when Jesus was condemned and he was brought before him, Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And Pilate said, "And what is truth?" Now that question has been with us from all eternity. It's been there from the beginning, from the garden. What is truth? Well, I think it takes a lot of study and faith and so forth to come up with the answer to that. Because, you know, when God gets really frustrated to us, with us, as he has done, you know, we whole history of the people who came out of Egypt and the Exodus and so forth, it all hinges around you need to recognize that God is the truth, and you have to follow the things he has given us so that we can live a happy life. But when you give up those things and that belief, in Romans 1:24, it talks about God's wrath. And he said, Paul says, "Therefore God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature, rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever." The Creator is. Man has become, has believed himself to be greater than the Creator. They ignore the fact that the Creator is there and with us, and that he established the laws of nature. I mean, you can't go against the laws of nature. And what are we doing today?
Well, wasn't Pilate himself, I mean, when he spits out this question, what is the truth? It was almost, you know, he's putting contempt about there is no such thing as truth. Wasn't he in the same position that a lot of us are today? In other words, Pilate was dealing with a country that recognized all kinds of different religions and tried to, in effect, be tolerant toward all of them in the sense that as long as they didn't do anything against the state, all of them were true. In effect, you know, that, again, I've said before, when everything is true, then in effect everything is false. If all religions are true, then all religions are false. I mean, in other words, if two religions, one preaches something exactly the opposite of the other, and the state recognizes both of them as being equally true, it turns out that religion itself simply becomes silly. And that's what was happening in Rome, and Pilate had no answer except to spit out, "What is the truth?"
Right.
And in contempt. And isn't that the point that we're sort of reaching today when we don't have a religious basis? At least we don't recognize it. There is a religious basis. Even in Rome there was, because people can't arrive at any kind of principles unless those principles at bottom are religious. There is no such thing as good or bad in nature. Only human beings can say this is good or that is bad. Animals and nature and rocks and trees can't do it. And when you pass a law, you in effect are saying this is good and that is bad.
But it isn't only people. It's God who has given us what is good and what is, you know, we have to recognize what the opposite of good is. Evil. God didn't give us evil. We've created it because we've turned our backs on our Creator and our beliefs.
Evil is the absence of the good. Evil is a deficit. You know, evil is a lacking. It's a lack. Evil doesn't exist in the sense of being something. It's something that's lacking, and that is exactly what our problem is today. We have things that are lacking, and that is the recognition that we can't arrive at the truth on our own reasoning. We can even arrive at the fact that there is a God based on reasoning. Aristotle and a number of other philosophers certainly did that, but we can't arrive at what our lives are supposed to be. by that, by reason alone.
No, that's true, because the basis of the whole theory that we can decide is wrong. We can't decide. It's written in when we were created. God is the one who makes the decision.
And at one time, we had one church in Western civilization to make the decision as to what is morally right and what is morally wrong. And when we had the breakup of that, when we had the Reformation, we lost that. And Christianity devolved into a whole number of competing denominations, if you will, or sects, if you will, and the unity was lost. And so this thing that never existed before called secularism took over, and it pretends there is such a thing as religious neutrality. It pretends that there is such a thing as principles without religion, or principles that are not religious. And then it assumes the authority to itself to make laws and so forth as if those laws don't really affect religious ideas. In fact, they do. They affect what they proclaim to be good or bad. And this is the direction that we're going in now. And these are the reasons for our problems. So when somebody hits you with that great leveler, who gets to decide? The fact is, let's take a look at our Western history and say who gets to decide is the institution that was responsible for Western civilization and the ideas of the imago Dei, that is, man is made in the image of God, the institution that was responsible for holding human beings as being worthwhile and having dignity, for proclaiming that people were entitled, the first one to proclaim people are entitled to their lives, and that life begins at conception, and that the violation of these laws are the violation of God's law, and it will bring the disaster that results from this kind of behavior.
It's gotten it to the point in this country and around the world, actually, that ignoring the idea that God is the creator and God is all for us, and denying that there is a God and living this secular materialistic life, we've come to the point where, what is God? Why bother? Because we are God. We'll all be God. Well, it's not true, and we can't tell the truth from the bad.
And isn't that what Paul predicted? Didn't he say that people will believe, that people will believe lies as truth, and that the truth are lies?
They won't be able to see it or hear it. They just won't.
Right.
And they aren't responding. I mean, if you can't even decide what the difference in sex between a male and a female, how in the world are you going to make a decision about anything else?
Exactly. We are being plunged into darkness. We are plunged into, this absolute not pretending, here is science. We're saying that science is supposed to be, a lot of people now are saying, by golly, science, this hard science is what society is supposed to be.
Oh, sure. And they're going to make it possible for males to carry a baby to term? Come on.
And science itself pretends that it can't tell a male from a female. Science itself pretends that it can't understand when, life takes place. It could understand all of those things before all of these religious ideas were rejected. In fact, without the basics of religion, science itself falls apart, as we can see a lot of it doing today.
And as a caution, look at Rome. They're going through the same thing then, in a way, that they, they had all these different gods and all these different things and all these different religions were around and so forth. Yet their preference was males preferred other males, women preferred other women. That's the start of it. They can't tell the difference between good and bad. We don't seem to be able to tell the difference today. Look at abortion.
Because you can't arrive at truth without going beyond the material world, and science cannot do that, because its very tools are the material that it takes for granted. There's nothing wrong with that. The church champions science. but it simply isn't capable of dealing with the kinds of questions.
The moral
questions that religion is capable of dealing with. And the fact is that who has the right to proclaim these? The institution that built Western civilization has the right to do that. And that's why the earlier popes proclaimed the authority of the church to speak for morality for all Western peoples and other peoples in general. In other words, we have to have an institution that is not dysfunctional, and it was the institution of Christianity, based on Judaism, of course, the two together, because that is, you know, where Christianity came from. In other words, salvation is from the Jews. We understand that. Christ was a Jew. But that particular line of evolution, if you want to call it that, of ideas and religion, is the line that we should return to. Because unless we do, our whole civilization is going to fall apart. Right. Something will take
you,
its place.
You can equate this to our present-day political situation. When people don't believe in the Ten Commandments any longer, they say, what is that and what is truth? And Nancy stands and says, the Constitution, what's that?
Okay, we don't want to get into particular politics here, but
not the politics.
We're going to have to stop here, and
we could go on longer.
But the fact is, we're going to have to stop here. And I hope everyone takes this into consideration. We have to start challenging some of the principles that we hold, and ask if those principles are always without serious, serious flaws. So, Saint Michael the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil.
May God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and do all the work of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan
and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.